We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Bradford Show. That's my open.
That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hits Bradford.
That's my open. I'm waiting for you to justify
your stupid opinion.
Bradfo Show. That's delicious. All right. Here we go. 1 hour. That hour went by quick. I wonder why. I wonder why that hour went by quick, John. Have any ideas?
No. No, I could make. There's a couple movies we could make a reference to right now, but I'll just, yeah.
Okay. And this hour is going to go by quick because it's going to be so entertaining. So gosh darn entertaining. I'm Rob Bradford with you all the way up into Red Sox pregame, I believe. Big showdown with the Houston Astros and Boston Red Sox. And by the way, speaking of Red Sox, we are going to... Who knew that I believe for the first time this season, a player was actually going to come on these airwaves, on the WEI airwaves, during a show? I can't think of another one who actually has outside of spring training.
I got nothing. No,
that we were waiting.
I know you're looking to me here.
We were waiting for the big 4:10 spot on Memorial Day weekend before we kicked off our player interviews. And Marcus Walden's going to join us
in prime time.
I like it, and obviously he's one of the best stories of the Red Sox season. I know you don't follow the Red Sox a whole bunch, John, but let me just tell you, Marcus Walden's one of the best stories.
I follow what I need to follow in order to do my job. Like, I know what happened last night. I did not watch the game.
Okay, and Marcus Walden has probably been in a few trending nows that you've written. So, there you go. Hey, look at you, I think.
Doing the math in my head.
Okay.
Like Zach Galifianakis
now. Well, just tell me that's the case. So anyway, until Marcus calls on in, we're going to talk a little bit about leadership, even more about, because we touched on Charo, we touched on the Red Sox, Porcello, we touched on the opposite end of the spectrum with Irving and the Celtics, but what we didn't do is the football. And John Anderson, who was a self-admitted non-leader on an 0-10 team in Marshfield High, knows more about leadership than anybody.
I wasn't detrimental to the team.
No, you love.
I wasn't one of the leaders.
But here's how I'm going to spin this. You love to be led.
Yeah, no, I could recognize a leader, and I
did. You have a leader? Who was the alpha on that Marshfield team?
Who was the leader? Well, what I'm just going to say random people's names from the South Shore that no one will know.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, there's plenty of. What's wrong? Just name somebody.
Name some of them. A guy named Ben Joyle, one of our big leaders.
Joyle?
Yep.
J-O-Y-A-L?
Yep.
Okay, why was he a leader?
On a football team?
Why was he a better leader than Kyrie Irving?
He was outspoken, and he knew when to get serious and when to go. As goofy of a kid as he was, he knew when to get
very
serious.
When he got serious, you're like, oh,
everyone fell in line.
Oh, crap.
He got serious. Yeah.
Joyle's getting not a jolly anymore.
Yep.
Right? Right? There you go. So, but with a football team, you follow football more than any other sport.
Yep.
The whole idea with the Patriots, it was, and now I think Brady falls under sort of what we were talking about with Ortiz, with Chara. He's older, right? He's older, he's excelled, he's been around, so you're always going to defer to that guy. But still, you have other leaders on a football team, like Slater, obviously. Who, mm-hmm. It's not like Tom Brady's getting in the middle of, how's it feel to be 6-3?
Right.
He's not
Bruce did that a lot, yeah.
Right. So you would agree that football leadership is probably along the lines, to be honest with you, along the lines of baseball, where it can't just be one guy, right?
Right. There's too many people involved for it to be one guy.
I think so. But I think that in basketball, it can be one guy. It can, right?
Yeah, there's what, 10 guys in the room,
But that said, the more I talk about this, I think it is has to do with age. Because Brady, even though we say it has to be more than one guy, it's sort of like, well, you have all these leaders, but at the end of the day, you have the head coach, obviously. But at the end of the day, it has to pass through Brady. I remember doing a podcast with Mookie Betts the year after Ortiz left. And he said, he's like, yeah, there was an element that, and he almost said this exactly, that everything had to be passed through David Ortiz. Because remember the David Price thing with Eck on the plane? like a lot of people said, hey, you know what? That would have never happened if Ortiz was there because he felt empowered to do that. And everything had to be passed through this one guy. I feel like that's how it is with the Patriots and Brady.
Well, it almost when you have someone like Brady on that team, it has to be like that, right?
I guess. But I mean, I guess you also have to be good because
right.
When
people start playing poorly, then people start to question that person's leadership. Like Kyrie, it definitely happened with Kyrie.
Well, I remember also. Like, so go back to Mike Napoli. Mike Napoli was a guy, he was perceived as sort of a leader in his own way. And he was, all of a sudden now he was hitting 200. Now, he was not expected to hit 200. The expectations wasn't the same for him as it was a Johnny Gomes, an Alex Cora, one of those guys. Those guys can lead and do nothing on the field. But Mike Napoli, like, he said this. He's like, I don't really feel comfortable saying anything to anybody because... why do they want to listen to this guy who's not pulling his weight?
Right.
And there's that element, too.
That always happens. Though I go to Tony Romo a lot on that, because that was a common criticism of Romo, is that, oh, he wasn't really a leader, and then the media would try to turn him into a leader, and then he'd go out there and throw a fourth-quarter pick on Sunday Night Football to lose a game.
Yeah, but that also goes to, like, you can't just make somebody a leader. Like,
right. They have to actually be a leader. And that was I witnessed people who, and again, high school locker room, whatever, so different. There were people that tried to be the leader and that thought they could just will themselves to being a leader, but they just weren't naturally a leader.
Were they good players or bad players?
Good, but they didn't have leadership qualities.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Just because the problem is that sometimes when you say you're good, then it's doesn't make you a leader. Anyway, so we're going to have Marcus Walden coming up right in a mere matter of seconds. And in case you don't have been living under the rock and not following the Red Sox this year, Marcus Walden is one of the best stories that that has been going on this season. And we're fortunate to have him on the line from Houston. Marcus, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. It's just me, Rob Bradford, and I will not ask you about acupuncture again. I will not. I had a great story about this, and it's not even acupuncture, but I found it fascinating. I don't know, but you have that aside, Marcus. You have a great story, and you're doing very, very well. You know, we saw you last year. You make the opening day roster, and then you go up and down. You come to spring training, and you were really, really good in spring training once again, but there was like, okay, you know, you got to start in the minors. Did you feel like heading into this year that you were on the verge of what you're doing now?
I mean, command-wise and stuff-wise, I'd say, yeah. I mean, last year, things kind of clicked for me, and 17 during the season, I had a really good second half of the year, and kind of just rolled it over into spring training, had a good spring last season. Unfortunately, got sent down and got hurt with a flexion of my elbow, and then kind of just ended up being a blessing in disguise, being able to go home and rest up. And I was there for the birth of my daughter. We've kind of talked about that a little bit. But being able to be home and resting up and then start throwing right around December 15th and start getting going for the season. And stuff-wise and command-wise, I've been pretty good.
You know, Marcus, everyone talks about your slider. Talk a little bit about, if you can, about how you actually rediscovered it. Because it really, and I'll say this, you don't have to say it, it's become one of the best pitches by a relief pitcher in the major leagues this year. But you really hadn't been throwing it up until relatively recently, right?
Correct, yeah. So 2017, I signed with the Red Sox, and I was starting. Well, I was in the bullpen. I ended up making 8 consecutive starts in a row on the backside of doubleheaders. And I just felt like the second or third time through the order, I was kind of getting hurt. Obviously, I was throwing sinker cutter only. Everything's hard. Everything's, you know, 89 to 91 with my cutter, 92 to 94 with my fastball. And I really needed something to be just slower. I didn't really care how much it broke necessarily, but I just needed something to get them off my fastball. And, so I started talking to Chandler Shepard, and, I mean, at the time, he had one of our best breaking balls in AAA. So I started talking to him. I tried to throw a breaking ball, more of a curve ball, try to get over the top more, and it kind of morphed into. So I did that, and then I started watching Craig, obviously, in 18 going into camp and seeing how he still holds a knuckle curve ball. Obviously, his is bigger, and it's got more bite. Obviously, he throws a little harder than I do. But just seeing how he kind of goes about it. And so I kind of morphed my breaking ball into what we'd call a slider now. I still hold it like a knuckle curve. I still think about getting on top of the baseball like a knuckle curve. But with my arm slot being kind of a three-quarter, I get that sweep action. And it's actually turned out for a pretty good pitch for me right now.
Well, like, so basically it's the same pitch that Kimbrel threw, right? Is what you're saying?
In essence, obviously he's got more. He's been doing it a lot longer. He's got a better feel for it than what I did at the time when I started throwing it. But obviously that's what really helps him get people off of his fastball, and he's the best closer in the game. And so why not watch him and learn from the best in the game?
Marcus Walden of the Red Sox is joining us. And, you know, Marcus, you know, I was talking to Brian Bannister about this the other day because – well, actually, I was talking to Barnes about this, about how, you know, he's thrown his curveball probably, I think, the second most of any pitcher in baseball. And I asked him, why are you doing that? He said, because hitters hit a fastball. Hitters are hitting fastballs more than ever. And it's it's your pitch, right? Do you feel like sort of what you're offering is right place, right time with how hitters are approaching and how hitters are swinging?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with how our bullpen sets up. Obviously, we got a lot of four-seam curveball guys, and with Thornburg, with Workman, with Barnes. And so I think that kind of plays into it a little bit for our bullpen, you know, success, being able to have different guys in different situations to face guys. But definitely being able to – you've got to be able to throw an off-speed pitch for a strike, especially these days, you know, right now in the game. Obviously, yesterday was a big part. I mean, sail through a couple, you know, some fastballs early in the game. They hit some hard hit balls, and then, you know, started mixing in the slider and the changeup. And I mean, he dominated the rest of the game.
Do you feel like? Well, when did you feel like when you came up this year, and you're not expected to pitch in the leverage situations that you are now? But was there a batter? Maybe this was even in spring training where you said, "There it is. I feel like I am, like, my career is ready to take a jump up because of the hitter's reaction or because of how I feel."
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Tough question. I mean, I think it has to do with everything. I mean, who I've been facing, I know I walked into spring training this year, and my first live BP was against the minor league guys. My second live BP was against the heart of our order. I faced Pedroia, Mookie, JD, Mitch, Steve Pierce, Eddie Nunez. And I talked to my buddy Brian, who I run my business with back home, and I said, well, I can tell you one thing. I'm not going to face a harder lineup than what I just did in my first fight, my real live BP. And he goes, well, how'd they do? I was like, well, I mean, I didn't get barreled up. He goes, then it's a success. You know, I mean, so that right there to me was kind of a big part to where I knew – obviously, it's early in camp. It's February 25th or so. But it was something that kind of resided in me that if – and I talked to them after, and I talked to Mookie, and I was like, you know, what do you see on the slide? I can't see it.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started getting some more confidence in it. And having Sandy catch me, you know, he's faced me a couple times in live BP. My first live BP, I faced Sandy. And it was – he's like, dude, I can't see it. It looks just like your cutter. And I think that's what's really helped me out is it's that manipulation of what the hitters are seeing, and now it's breaking down and into a lefty, which is where I've thrown a lot more to lefties, honestly, which is kind of a little bit different for me because I used to throw a lot of, you know, front hip sinkers and inside cutters to lefties, and now it just kind of helps me with another pitch, being able to throw a slider and get under the barrel.
So what was the difference? I mean, like you said, you showed up. And you were sort of evolving this way last year. What was the difference in terms of you, Sandy Leone, saying that I see it looks different? Mookie Betts saying it looks different. What was the difference you feel like coming in this year?
I mean, when Mookie Betts tells you that you got a pretty good pitch, I feel like I got to listen to him. You know, he's got one of the better eyes in the game. I mean, he went, I want to say it was almost 100 games without striking out a year and a half ago. You know, so he's been doing this for a while. He had an unbelievable year last year. So that really is what gave me the confidence in it to where you don't have to throw it, you know, hanging in the zone or something like that I used to do earlier in my career was I try to throw every pitch in the zone as opposed to I want it to look just like my fastball that's in the zone and then breaking out of it. So if they can't see it and they're seeing fastball in the zone out of my hand, you know, the percentage of them swinging is a lot higher. So having that confidence from Mookie and Sandy – you know, even whatever that was, February 25th is, I think, the day. That's what really gave me the confidence in what I was doing, because I still considered it my third best pitch walking into camp. And probably that day, you know, I talked to Bannister, and we talked a little bit last year saying we got to throw more sliders. We want you to be a 33% mix on all three of your pitches, as opposed to throwing 60% sinkers and only 10% sliders. So I think having my repertoire kind of mixing in a little bit more. I mean, even last night I threw more sinkers, more cutters than what I did my first time against them. And just being able to have different tools for different situations and having the confidence in each pitch.
All right, Marcus Walden joins us. Just two more questions. One, what's your business so we can publicize it? Because you said you're in business with your buddy, so let's go.
Yeah, so I got one of my best friends is Brian Oliver, and then he was our trainer in college, and one of my really good friends that we've been together for about 12 years, Drew Matos. We own an indoor baseball facility back in Fresno called DIB Baseball Academy.
All right.
So we've been doing that since 2015 was our first year we opened up.
All right, there you go. Our listenership is huge in Fresno, so you're the big winner today. And the last thing is, we were just talking about before you came on about leadership, and I know it's a broad subject, but I talked to Porcello about this the other day, because Zdeno Chara of the Bruins, that he had come out and said basically, hey, listen, you know what? I hate saying the word rookie. I hate saying that if you're up here, you got to be classified. You're here to contribute. It's not like it used to be. I talked to Porcello about this the other day. He was excellent talking about how it's changed since he came up in 2009. I just want to get your perspective of leadership in a baseball clubhouse and how that dynamic works.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Me and Porcello and DP, we all got drafted the same year. So when I grew up in the minor leagues, and obviously Rick and DP were in the big leagues at the time, 2009, 2010, it was completely different. I mean, I talked to a lot of guys that were older than me when I was growing up in high A, double A, and they're telling me that was one of the worst times of their life, being up in the big leagues for the first few weeks and getting treated bad. And I walked in the clubhouse last year, nervous as can be, and it was unbelievable. I mean, the other day, I finished my inning. I go straight to Rick, and I start talking to him about certain things, pickoffs and holds, and certain things that I know I still got to work on. And, you know, that guidance, that leadership by a lot of our guys that have been in the big leagues for a long time. I mean, we just got Steve Pierce, got his 10-year in the big leagues the other day when we were in Toronto.
Did he get a cake? Because the other guy's got a cake.
I'm not sure. I didn't stay long enough to.
All right. Okay. But go ahead. Sorry. I'm obsessed with the cake.
No, you're good. And, so, I mean, that leadership and just being able to where you are a part of the team. And that was something Chris Sale told me, me and Bobby Pointer last year when we made the team was, you know, we're not here to pick on you guys. There's a couple things you guys got to do. But at the end of the day, you're here to contribute. If you're here and you're miserable, you're going to pitch like crap. So let's keep that to a minimum. Let's keep you, you know, with good confidence and good morale. And now when we call on you in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, whatever it is, you're going to go out there and you're going to be the best you can be because you want to succeed and help this team win the same way Phil wants you to do it every single day he's on the mound.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Marcus, thanks so much for taking a few minutes there in Houston. And we'll catch up with you later. I really appreciate you coming on.
No problem. You have a good one.
That's Marcus Walden, the Boston Red Sox. Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff from Marcus. The actually really, really good stuff about the leadership, about his evolution this year. I hadn't heard that story before about Mookie Betts basically making him feel like he actually could pitch the way he's pitching. That's crazy. And like I said, going back to the leadership stuff, I mean, John, I know you weren't paying attention, but still, the fact is that he gave awesome examples when him and Bobby Pointer came up last year, Chris Sale, saying, you know, we need you. We need you to succeed. It's sort of like with the Patriots, to go back to the Patriots, John. Remember, I mean, I don't know, and I know that they make you sing fight songs, and we see that on Hard Knocks and stuff, right?
Well, there's already a perfect example today. N'Keal Harry is with Tom Brady wherever
right.
he is right
Thank
now.
Thank you.
They need N'Keal Harry. They need him to be good this year.
Thank
but,
you.
And I know, you know, they haven't had a wide receiver, and however, I guess Malcolm Mitchell was good his rookie year. He only did a few
Malcolm
things.
Mitchell, no. Bethel Johnson was never invited to Tom Brady's backyard. Right?
Yeah, see, maybe Chad Jackson would have panned out if he had gone to Montana.
It's the that's why you're a great NFL columnist.
Oh, right? Thank you. Thank you.
Because
talk after the show.
Because that's a perfect example. That's exactly what we're talking about. You're right. Anyone who goes to is it both Twitter and Instagram? Where Brady was, he has pictures
of it's on both.
Edelman with his dog. They're having like a, I don't know what they're doing.
So how must Braxton Berrios feel right now that Edelman's daughter is out there running routes for Tom Brady?
Yes.
Braxton Berrios isn't out there working on his craft.
Like, well, you know, eh. But you can see those pictures. Are they having a cookout? What do they do? There must be a whole day thing, right?
I'm sure it's catered.
Right? But that's the whole thing. The rookie before
avocado burgers.
Rookies were never invited to eat the avocado burgers before. Now it's
N'Keal
like
Harry's got to be eating the avocado. N'Keal, the metaphorical avocado burger.
Yes, exactly. Who knew? I mean, that's if there was ever a better signature moment to show to illustrate how things have changed when it comes to leadership of a team, it is N'Keal Harry eating the avocado burger at Tom Brady's house today and then posting it on Instagram. There you go. I think we've all tied it together. All right, 617-779-7937. Weigh on in. Anything you want. Again, if you want to talk about who are the good leaders, the bad leaders in Boston sports, please do so. Also, anything with the Red Sox, reaction to the Marcus Walden interview, which I thought was pretty good. And anything along those lines. I'm Rob Bradford along with John Anderson. Be back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back to Rob Bradford on WEEI.
I just want to get your perspective of leadership in a baseball clubhouse. And how that dynamic works.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Me and Porcello and DP, we all got drafted the same year. So when I grew up in the minor leagues, and obviously Rick and DP were in the big leagues at the time, 2009, 2010, it was completely different. I mean, I talked to a lot of guys that were older than me when I was growing up in high A, double A, and they're telling me that was one of the worst times of their life, being up in the big leagues for the first few weeks and getting treated bad. And I walked in the clubhouse last year, nervous as can be, and it was unbelievable. I mean, the other day, I finished my inning. I go straight to Rick, and I start talking to him about certain things, pickoffs and holds, and certain things that I know I still got to work on. And, you know, that guidance, that leadership by a lot of our guys that have been in the big leagues for a long time. I mean, we just got Steve Pierce, got his 10-year in the big leagues the other day when we were in Toronto.
Did he get a cake? Because the other guy's got a cake. Say, he did not know if he got a cake. But you know what we do, John Anderson?
What's that?
We find out. We do investigative research.
Fire off a couple texts during that break?
I can confirm. Steve Pierce got a cake.
Oh.
He got a cake. Evidently, Marcus Walden did not get a piece of the cake. But for being 10 years in the major leagues, I remember in Oakland, Porcello and Price was the same day. You had two cakes, which nobody touched. Two cakes just sitting there. But evidently, if you get 10 years in the major leagues, along with getting a full pension, you also get a cake. And Steve Pierce got a cake, we can confirm. Confirmation, Steve Pierce got a cake. Maybe that's why he hit a home run the other day.
It just all leads up to a cake like that.
It's 10 years.
I understand it's tradition, but...
What, you're crapping all over baseball again, aren't you?
Like, I'm a lacrosse guy, too.
Are you?
Yes,
did you see the Chris Hogan thing today?
I did not.
Oh, my goodness. Now I got to look it up.
I was the voice of UMass lacrosse for 3 years, Rob.
You have to tell me that? Obviously.
You're going to request different producers going forward.
No, I'm going to pull this up. But Chris Hogan, you're going to like this. Super Bowl champ Chris Hogan sends more than 300 Penn State students to lacrosse championships. Do you know that?
Oh, that is this weekend, I believe.
Thank you.
Or not at Gillette.
That's why Chris Hogan is doing it.
Oh, okay.
Because he played lacrosse as well.
Really? He did?
Oh, my. Forget it. You were going to be an NFL columnist. Now you're not.
Oh, I lost that.
I know
lost
like
that opportunity.
Three times as much about the NFL as you do. Chris Hogan was a lacrosse player.
I know, Rob. Jeez Louise. It's like a Dale Wiggy dynamic right here.
Oh, my God. By the way, I will be on with Wiggy tomorrow. Tomorrow after Sunday skate, 10 to 1. But here's the plan. I'm revealing the plan before I even reveal the plan to Wiggy. I'm going to be honest with you. Because I'm not revealing much to him these days. Because I'm literally still sore. I am still sore. My back hurts.
Yeah, that was, yeah, you and I never discussed that situation.
Oh,
there,
we can discuss it. We'll discuss that next time.
That should be shown in film classes.
Yes. What, great. How to hype up a fight? Absolutely.
There was an iconic shot of you.
Where I was bracing myself?
Yeah, I'm already sending it to my old journalism
right.
photography
Right, well, and the referee was standing, Emerson Lotsky was standing 10 feet away. I have the image of him standing 10 feet away. And here's the thing.
Called it even, didn't he?
So here's the thing. Because that was, it was 0-0, as it says on the thing. This is talking about Wiggy in my basketball game. And I got to step on Wiggy. So now, that's going to be difficult. Wiggy's fairly quick for his size. I get a step on Wiggy. I'm driving the hoop, and he just totally encompasses his 400-pound body into me. And as
it's
you
like
saw,
a black hole.
as you saw, like it's not. I didn't just fall down. I was literally smothered to the ground by this guy. The referee is standing 10 feet away. I said, "What?" And there was no call. And that was that. I knew my will had been taken out of me when I knew this is how it's going to be. I had no chance after that.
You like bounced off of him. I saw the video.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Anyway, how did I get down this road? Sunday tomorrow morning, programming note. Sunday skate, I think is from,
eight to ten.
Why not 7 to 10? They don't want to come in early?
I don't know. I think they may have realized that 7's a little early for it.
That's fine. So 8 to 10... obviously big doings. So what I want to do, and I think we have confirmation that we can do this, is that from that 10 to 11, we're going to do a hockey roundtable because Wiggy will be in, and it'll give the opportunity with the Sunday skate guys to stick around with Wiggy, and I'll be the moderator.
Right. Preeminent hockey mind of Boston.
Oh my goodness. And all these know-it-alls.
Why isn't Wiggy on Sunday skate to begin with?
Well, he will be. This is his chance, okay. Right? So it's from 10 to 11. We'll do the hockey roundtable. The you know how when the Red Sox would go to the World Series, we have the baseball roundtable?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why aren't we doing... This is the hockey roundtable.
Why aren't we at Lord Hobo for this?
We could, and we could also simulate chugging beer.
Yeah, there's actually an O'Doul sitting right over there.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
Glenn broke 10 seconds trying to drink.
He did, because I saw no video of it.
They tweeted out the times.
I saw no video of it. I wonder why. I saw no video of it.
What, you think he dropped the iron fist on that? You think he has that pull?
What do you like to see them chug beer? Like, that would be a thing that you could talk about for 3 days and do it in slow motion, much like the Wiggy and Reamer race.
Yeah.
You get video of it and you talk about it. Anyway, so we're going to do the hockey roundtable from 10 to 11 tomorrow. And then my plan is, so media day is 11:45. I want Wiggy to leave the show. I'd rather do the show by myself. I could stop there. I'd rather do the show by myself. But I think it's more important that Wiggy goes to the Stanley Cup Finals media day, right? Don't you think that that's better for the station?
Him yes, I media think it day? Is.
Yeah. So
is he going to take videos himself, or do we need to get another producer on?
I don't know, but whatever he does, he's very good at that. He's good about doing things like that. So he'll go over there and he'll spice things up over at media day, and then maybe he'll call in because we're on till 1. What a morning of radio it's going to be tomorrow.
The Bruins need to not let him near Zdeno Chara though.
Why?
Because he might pull a who's the skater girl from the movie that came out last year.
What are you Tanya Harding.
Yeah, he might Tanya. Tanya Harding.
Do you know anything about anything? Holy man!
No, I only know football.
All right, speaking of which, what were we going to talk? Oh, that has actually Boston Calling.
Oh, right.
So it's right around the corner from here. This is obviously morphing from your safety on an 0-10 team with no leaders. So Boston Calling, you're not happy with what's going on over here?
I didn't like the lineup. there was one artist I loved on the lineup, which was going to be Friday. A little lady by the name of Janelle Monae dropped out a few weeks ago. So I was going to go to the Friday.
What is this, like Fire Festival? What's going on?
No, I don't know. I don't know why she dropped. I don't know. It might have something to do with Kyrie.
Who's the headliner over here?
Tonight, I want to say Tame Impala. Last night was 21 Pilots, and I forget who the other one is. I think Travis Scott might be another night. Here, I have it up.
Lil Nas X, he's going to be in town. Why doesn't he just swing on by?
So Lil Nas X is performing today at Boston Calling.
Okay.
And then
he's not
also
the headliner?
Monday, and then also, no, he's not the headliner. He has three songs, two of which are remixes of the other
song. He is the most popular song.
That is accurate, yeah.
Right. It's not a question mark. It's an exclamation.
Right,
yes, he has the most popular song of anybody over at these shenanigans.
Well,
over
right
here.
Now, not in a year or 2 years. Do you think? Do you know? 2 years ago, 21 Pilots had the most popular song 2 years ago.
So right, we're not living 2 years from now. We're living right now.
Okay, but 2 years later, 21 Pilots, they are the big. You can't see my phone because we're a mile away from each other.
Mambo
in this
number
new building.
Five would have been the headliner.
One-hit wonders don't... That's not how that works.
We don't know it's a one-hit wonder. So he...
No, I'm not saying... No, I'm saying Lou Bega was a one-hit wonder.
Right.
Yeah, I know who did that song.
Okay, all right. All right, anyway, I'm looking forward to Wiggy going to Media Day, NHL Finals Media Day. Did you hear about my trip to Toronto?
Yes, I did. You were harassing children and getting them to insult
can
the
we play?
Bruins,
I interviewed... listen, as I said before, one of the things that's been very discouraging to me as we go into the NHL Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, on Monday, is that it's been boring. It's been boring. There's been no back and forth. Nothing. So I went to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I looked... because people in Toronto hate the Bruins. They hate Brad Marchand. So I wanted to stir things up a little bit. So I did.
Boo, Bruins, you suck. Screw you. Boo.
I could hear that all day. Can we play that for the last hour? That's so good. But that's what we need more of, right? And do you think this kid was from St. Louis or even Toronto? No. He was from New York. So that's a problem. There's nobody, and I asked you before the show, I know that we're throwing things together before, but I need something from St. Louis. I need something from St. Louis to spice things up at all.
We could start, if you want, we could start doing like crude Photoshops of the arch.
Oh, yeah. So this is what I did. Do you have this sound? The guy from last night? So last night I did this whole thing. I did this whole thing about how I was upset that there was no animosity between St. Louis and Boston, which you should have something along these lines when you have a finals, right? You should have something when you beat LA. You have obviously the Patriots play even Atlanta, worst sports city in America. You had it when Philly. You have things. Even the Rams. Was there any with the Rams? Austin. The Ricky Proles kid talked some smack. I like that. Yeah, you had a little bit.
Well, yeah, Nickell Robey-Coleman.
Right. Yes, thank you. Thank you. So there's always something. We don't have anything. We don't have anything because St. Louis is like the Canada of the United States. They're way too nice. And as I pointed out yesterday, John, like even Vancouver, when they played Vancouver, they rioted after they lost. There are going to be no riots in St. Louis. And I'm not condoning riots, but all I'm saying is that there is that element of we're just so happy to be here. We're singing Gloria after the games. And if we lose, oh, well, the great game of hockey was the great game of hockey. But so I was saying this last night, and somebody, some Bruins fan, answered the call to try to at least stir things up. This is what he said.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, we will have to hear that next.
Oh, next. Okay. This is what he will say after the break. We got to go to a break. 617-779-7937. Be back after this.
Back to
whatever. Come on, Dave.
WEEI.
What, whatever. Come on, Dave.
Okay,
let's go. What do you got? What do you want to say about the Red Sox?
Oh, screw St. Louis.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. At least somebody said it. Thank you.
Screw St. Louis.
Okay.
And them and that arch they got. Somebody ought to go up there and like run a saw through the middle of that arch.
I like it. I like it. Thank you, David. No. I like it. I like it. What else you got?
Screw the NFL.
That was from last night. That was David in the car or something. I don't know where he's from. But I asked for people to stir things up with St. Louis. And listen, we're taking the saw right in the middle of that arch. We're taking the saw right in the middle of the arch,
Sean. It's a moon-sized saw to take that down.
It's amazing.
David's going to go up there with a little handsaw and try to take it down himself.
We're not just like putting poop in a bag and throwing it on a doorstep. No. We're taking the saw right in the middle of the arch.
You were stirring him up, and I feel like if you had kept being like, more David, he was going to say something like really messed up, like within physical harm and stuff.
This started going, I wanted him just to, the airing of the grievances for the entire world, because he immediately, who doesn't immediately go from taking a saw to the middle of the St. Louis Arch to railing on Roger Goodell? So
people from New England, apparently.
I guess. But don't you agree? I mean, you're a connoisseur of the sports scene of finals, and it's good for business, right? I mean, all finals in Boston are good for business, and we've been very fortunate to have a bunch of them. But part of having gone through this, we also know that there's an importance of having some animosity with the other side, the other city. And I'm not talking about, I'm going to bet you a cup of clam chowder and a rack of ribs. No. I mean, no. We want something more, right? This is important. It's part of the equation. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Oh, you don't like the cup of clam chowder and
no,
rack of ribs?
No, I'm just laughing at it. Just, you know. Pick your Boston stereotype. Like, they're going to come over here and push our tea in the harbor or something.
Listen, this is what it was. This was a big thing back in the day. The mayors, and it was always...
The mayor thing still happens. It's apparently not this time around, though.
Like, why? It's like...
I don't know.
Like,
ask them.
But it's like, how about you, like, put, like, $1 million on the line or something, right? I'm going to bet you... just do this. Here you go.
I cannot afford to be betting.
Mayor Marty Walsh. This is what I'm telling you. I don't know. Let's look up the mayor of St. Louis. Here's the bet. $1 million. My team wins. I get $1 million. Your team wins. You get $1 million. That's a whole lot better than a cup of clam chowder or a rack of ribs.
Woman by the name of Lyda Crewson. L-Y-D-A, Crew with a K.
Lyda Crewson. Have we heard anything from her? Google her in St. Louis Blues. Does she even know that the Blues are playing? Do that. That's worth a Google. We're going to get to the bottom of it if St. Louis actually cares about this series. Lyda, what's her name? Lyda Crewson?
Crewson.
How do you spell it?
Crewson.
Okay, St. Louis Blues. Here we go. It's worth a Google. Let's see. I don't see. No, all I see is State of the City address. That's it.
That's what came up for me, too.
But what's going on? What's happening? We're playing a city that doesn't care about their team. What's going on, John? Just get some animosity going somehow, some way, please.
Well, they obviously haven't cared about other teams that have been in their city because those teams are no longer
in the city. Yes. Yeah. Well, I went to Toronto, and besides getting the kid to talk crap about the Bruins, one of the things I did, I went to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I'm looking for somebody to get something going. So I'll go in the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I'm looking for anything St. Louis Blues, and I figure there's going to be something from the NHL Finals from 1970, the Blues and the Bruins, or the Orr goal, or something along those lines. And what do I come up with? Nothing. I came up with Wayne Gretzky's jersey from when he played 18 games with the St. Louis Blues, and by the way, he was named captain.
Well, yeah, because he's Wayne Gretzky. He had to be captain everywhere he went, right?
Well, why? Because
he's Wayne Gretzky. Is he Tom Brady wouldn't be a captain?
To morph into our leadership. Was Wayne Gretzky a leader? Should he have been captain? I don't think that's a perfect example. You're Keneal Harry. Am I saying it right, Keneal?
Nikhil.
Because you always mix it up, right? Nikhil.
Sure.
You do.
I always mix it up.
Okay, Nikhil Harry. Nikhil Harry going to Tom Brady's house. that was a good example of leadership. You're inviting the rookie over to the lawn, to the great house of Tom Brady. That is leadership. Not saying you're a rookie, you can't come over my house. Perfect example of what we're talking about with Chara, with Porcello, with these other people. But we also said, just because you're the best player of a team doesn't mean you should be a captain. And boom, we stumble into another perfect example. Wayne Gretzky being the captain of the St. Louis Blues.
Well, I don't. With Wayne Gretzky, I don't know. I don't know how old he was when he went to the Blues, but I don't know anything about Wayne Gretzky as a leader. How he was as a leader, he failed as a coach, so maybe that's indicative of how he was as a leader. But they eventually broke up the band there in Edmonton too, and they shipped him off for whatever $1 million in cash and a bunch of picks. But
thank you for the history lesson.
History there, yeah. Mark Messier was the captain after that, but. I don't know what Wayne Gretzky was like as a leader, just because he goes to another team like the Blues. And
I'm not saying he's a bad guy.
Right.
I'm not saying he wasn't a great player. I'm not saying, how old was he? So that was 95, 96. He was born in 61, so that would make it, he was about 34 years old. So he was older for a hockey player. He wasn't
right.
Like Chara
old. At that point,
old.
he's a monolith already.
Yes.
Like, I know that was towards the end. Maybe he wasn't putting up as
better
stat lines or anything. But yeah, if Tom Brady went to another team right now, he would be the captain of that team.
Yeah, but here's the difference. And so was Gretzky. Gretzky must have been the captain of he certainly was the captain of the Kings and probably Edmonton as well. Even I would like to know, this is what I want to know, how early Wayne Gretzky was a captain. Because I'm guessing Wayne Gretzky probably was named a captain before he should have been named a captain. Right?
Probably. Yeah,
we'll check
on that during the break.
This is my whole point, is that just because you're the best player, Kyrie Irving, just because you're the best player doesn't mean you're a leader. Does not mean you're a leader. Like in Chara, yeah, okay, he's not the best player anymore, but he's older and he's a pretty good player and he's a leader. Bergeron's a leader on that team, but probably not in the same way Chara is. I'm not even talking about captain. I'm talking about leaders of the team, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. The point is that, yeah, there are cases, Ortiz, Chara, Brady, where you have really good guys who are older, who everything's going to be siphoned through. But that doesn't mean that they are the only leaders in that clubhouse.
The perfect example is Joe Thornton.
Right.
And Patrick Marleau, for that instance, too, when he was on the Sharks. Because both of them had the C stripped from them. And I know captain, literal captain versus leaders are two different things. But Joe Pavelski's the leader of that team, and he was also given the C from Joe Thornton, but obviously everything goes through Joe Thornton.
You don't all have the C stripped from your chest. That must be so demoralizing. But
yeah, but he's on. That was like 4 years ago now, and look, he's still there.
It's the point is that you, and this goes back to what I said about baseball. It is so stupid that any team ever had captains with baseball team, including the Red Sox. Jason Varitek was a leader on that team in his own way, but he was one of about five or six leaders on that team. And just because he had a C, I think some people outside would say, oh, that's the guy who's going to give the Rudy speech on the stool in the middle of the clubhouse. It's never going to happen that way. And that's why I think baseball, you don't even see captains with baseball anymore. I remember Mike Sweeney was a captain with the Royals. Obviously Jeter is an outlier. He didn't have the C, but he was, perceived, he was the captain, but you don't see it with baseball, and for good reason. Yes. So 617-779-7937. The reason that we were talking about this was because of the signature moment for me this past week was Chara standing in the middle of the clubhouse. I'm sorry, in the middle of the locker room, why they're getting ready for the Stanley Cup Finals and professing his desire to say everybody in that locker room was equally as important. Rookies, he doesn't like to say rookie, first-year players, middle guys, older guys, whoever it was. And this is one of the reasons why the Bruins are who they are. And this is why the Celtics, who were the teams that they ended up being. Just before we go to a break, let's go on Paul in Westfield. What's going on, Paul? Can you pull that up for me, John? Hey, Paul, what's going on?
I've been beautiful, sunny afternoon, 350th birthday party and parade in Westfield. Life is good.
Oh, nice, nice. It is a glorious day. I appreciate everybody listening, however you're listening.
Yes, sir. Hey, Brad, well, I'm hoping you're going to possibly have more reason on the Kyrie thing. I just have one quick point and a question. When after the series, when he said He's never lost four in a row, which is what a new experience for him, which is terrible. He doesn't mind seeing Washington play, which sounds really bad. It sounds like, you know, if you left the room and walked back in and heard that, I see how heads would explode. However, I haven't heard the other players seem to take him down and out. And when that first game was so definitively good, he's one of the best ball handlers in the league. I'm not sure if blaming him for what happened is fair. I just think
I'm not blaming. Listen, Paul, I'm not blaming Kyrie for solely what happened here. But I'm just, when I'm talking about leaders and I talk about, you know, and I think you go through what he said over the course of the season. And even, did you read the Jackie McMullen story at the end of the year about, you know, how basically we figured it out. Kyrie changed the way he led for the last couple months, and Terry Rozier figured it out, and Jaylen Brown figured it out. Well, they didn't figure it out. They didn't. I mean, and to me, Paul, what this rings of, and I brought this up earlier, it resonates to me much like it did with Paul Pierce was named captain. Like, he was the best player, but he wasn't ready to be captain. He evolved into being a captain, and I think Kyrie can do that as well. It just isn't happening right now.
Yes, sir, I agree, and that's a key point. You know, remember, Bobby Orr will punch you in the face on the ice and cuddle your kids off the ice. That's a very rare and difficult balance, and Kyrie's young. You bring up a good point, and maybe he will evolve into a better player. And I think it's also important to realize when he has like a more of an Eastern view, which when you present it to people like us that are, I want it now, I want to be pissed, it's almost like offensive when they're just telling us to try to look at this objectively. That's what I think he's doing. And Brad, if that's the case, then he's not a hothead. That's what you need to evolve and be a leader.
Yeah, but you know what? Paul, thanks for the call. You need that, but you also need other elements of it. If you're not going to have the one alpha, the one, the Chara, the Ortiz, the Brady, if you're not going to have that, and the Celtics don't have that right now, then you need elements of what Kyrie delivers and maybe what somebody else delivers, but not like all matched up in 12 guys or 15 guys. I'm talking about three guys that they can get together and say, hey, you know what? This have a singular message. And this not blame the young guys. And young guys don't blame the old guys. And I think that was missing. And maybe 1 year older, it changes. I don't know. But I think that was what missing. You heard Kyrie. One of the things that Kyrie said that I think was accurate was having the older guy of saying, this is how you do things. And I talked to Ray Allen about that. He said, absolutely. Because you need a guy to say, when you're feeling way too good about yourself to bring you back down to earth, and when you're feeling way too bad about yourself to build you up. And as 26-year-old Kyrie Irving, like, I don't know if he's up to that. I think he learned a lot about being a leader this year. I do. But I think he also has a long way to go, whereas you look at these other teams, Brady, Chara, and I keep bringing up Porcello, but there's other guys, Sale, you know, there's other guys in there, Pedroia. There are other guys in there who are making the whole leadership stew work. Anyway, 617-779-7937. I see the calls lined up. I'll get to you, but I've got to take a break right now. I'm Rob Bradford. Be back right after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.